I'm Alex Augustiniak, and I'm joined again in the studio with Lloyd Edge. Welcome, Lloyd.
Hi, Alex. How are you going?
Really good to see you, Lloyd. We've got another great group of exciting guests joining us today in the studio. Kyle and Cara, our former Block 2014 contestants and now full-time renovators. Welcome, guys. We're so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're excited to have a chat.
We've got a lot to talk about today, but we'd love to know a bit of your background story. Obviously, you guys, since your time on the block, you're doing great things today, also conjured quite a really good following. But we'd love to know a bit more of the story before the block and I guess from there to today.
Well, we are just two young kids who fell in love at 16, love at first sight. I guess that in itself is rare these days. We've been together for more than half our life. We both found that we had this love of renovating, I guess. But I guess at the time we didn't know it. I was at uni, Kyle was an apprentice carpenter, and I just needed some furniture. So we'd go out to old secondhand furniture stores and buy cool things and do them up. And people would comment like, you should sell this stuff. This is really cool. And that's when we really discovered we love that process of making old new again, and let's start saving for a house.
We did that. We bought our first house in Killarney Vale. We were deciding between two properties in, you know, two different suburbs, and we went for the house that I knew that would be a more easy renovation. It was a bigger block of land, so it ticked those boxes. And because I had the skills, I'm a carpenter, I knew what we could achieve. So we set out to build our first home.
And we probably did things a little bit differently to how most people would do their first reno. We really put our blood, sweat and tears into it. I was a physiotherapist at that point. I'd just finished uni. We'd come home every night, every weekend, and we'd work on the house. And we created, still to this day, I think I would live in that house. Like, the floor plan was amazing. We created a huge family home because we knew we wanted to target it to a family. We knew it wouldn't be ours living in it long term.
We also knew, we were realistic, we knew that we'd eventually move on and use it as a stepping stone. But I think, like anything that we've always done it to how we would want it, like good quality, targeting that family. And that's what we did. This renovation took us about 3 years to do because we saved up, spent some money. So we literally had a little shack and we built the new house around the shack, which meant we could live in the shack while we basically built the house around it.
So what sort of blood, sweat and tears, and like how many hours would you have done that? Because I assume that you're both working full time. So Kyle, yeah. You're a carpenter, and Cara, you're a physiotherapist. So you would have had full time jobs. And then after hours and on weekends, you would have been doing all this sort of, like, I guess, as a passion, as a love.
Yeah. And I guess you do a little bit, you see the transformation and it becomes addictive. Like, anyone who's renovated would see that. When we set out and did the plans, we had no idea how we were going to fund it. We had enough equity to reborrow a little bit to get pretty much locked up. Then it was just save a bit, do a bit more, save a bit, do a bit more. So lots of late nights and getting up in the roof because it's pouring with rain and there's a leak and all that trauma that goes with renovating.
And how long ago was that renovation, guys, looking back?
Well, we bought that home in 2008. And we'd like started to renovate it over that course of time and basically had it pretty much finished in 2012.
And in terms of, I suppose, with the first renovation you guys done, and, you know, we're just talking off air, like, renovating and building a family home is so much more emotive than numbers on a spreadsheet from an investing perspective. Has much changed in terms of how you guys approach a project today, all these years later?
Not really, I guess. We've never been the sort of renovators that will just render the front of a property and do the bare minimum or paint tiles to do that purely cosmetic reno. We've always been an all-in because Kyle's a builder and we've got the skill set behind us, we've got the trades behind us. So we've always just been an all-in type renovation. And I guess we just look at it like we're targeting the buyers that can see a quality build or renovation.
So after that first property, did you sell that and then move on to something else?
We actually saved up a bit and went around South America for a few months because we just felt like we need to leave a
mental break.
We need to have a rest. And it was when we got back, we were literally lying on the couch one night and we actually had not watched the block that much prior to that. And ads came up, they were auditioning or they wanted people to send in audition tapes. And I said to Kyle, that would be like what we did in 3 years, in 3 months. Like, how fun would that be? But I would never do that because I'm not going on television. And I think that planted a seed in Kyle's head. And he just said, no, we're going to do that. That's where it went.
That's it. We started the application process, filled in the longest, most excruciating form. It's like a psych evaluation as well.
I think it really is a psych form. It's like, what would your partner do in that situation? What would your partner say you would do in that situation? It's quite tedious.
Yeah, it's like, what are your weaknesses? What would your partner say your weaknesses are? give us an example of your weakness. It's just like, yeah, it goes quite around in circles.
I'd be interested to see if you both answered or any of the contestants had similar answers when they sort of did the cross-examination. Did you find out or?
No, and I'd love to read it back like all these years later. What did we actually say? I remember one thing in our audition video, we said we know that we would smash the challenges. We'd do really well. And we were that couple that won every challenge pretty much to the end. So that was interesting.
You've said you've sort of been together for more than half of your lives. Did it cross your mind that doing this sort of thing and going on a TV show and renovating in 3 months that you might, you know, split up or have relationship problems? Because that sort of thing can potentially happen.
Oh,
I think
absolutely.
I think it sunk in when they said you're on. I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just get myself into and how is this going to end for us?
But like at the same time, it sort of never really entered my mind about our relationship because we got married young, but we'd also been through a lot together from an early age as well. Like we'd spent the last 3-4 years renovating day in, day out, long nights, all weekend. Like, you know, we both knew that we had the same drive, the same work ethic. And so it never was like, oh my God, we're going to survive this renovation. Like that was always a given.
I suppose you already had an initial taste, albeit over a much longer period of time. And I suppose the biggest adjustment would have been, I mean, you're mic'd up pretty much the whole day, aren't you?
Yeah, and I guess that really dawned on me. They never said you are on the block, definitely. You have to fly to Melbourne and do an elimination challenge. It dawned on me when I was painting skirting board in our elimination room and there was about 3 cameras on me and I'm going, what on earth am I doing wrong? That they are all watching me paint this skirting. It was so intimidating and it dawned on me like they are watching our every move.
Mm. I think a big wake-up call for me was when we were doing it. The same thing, you're mic'd up and for some reason, like, you know, when I'm working and when I'm building and I'm on site, I get so used to having like, you know, a radio station or music on in the background to sort of, you know, you can sort of work to. And this was just dead silence and it was really eerie. And then you had like 3 cameramen like all filming you at the same time, like, you know, putting together a skirting board or a picture frame or something like that. And you're just sort of like looking around going, oh man, this is weird.
This is really intimidating. That was probably the most intimidating point for us. And then we got on the block. And then what happens is you get to know, there's always 3 people with you, a cameraman, a sound man and a producer, and you get to know them. And I guess that's how they get everything out of you in the end, because you become so comfortable with them that you just talk and you forget that there's... I don't think you ever really forget, but you become so much more relaxed and your true colours show, I guess.
And Kyle, how did you address Cara's initial reluctance to go on TV? Was that a hard conversation at the time or?
No, not really. It was just like, you know, this is just what we're doing. You're on TV. You don't have a choice.
He didn't make me. I just came to the realisation, you're not acting. This is how I thought about it. I've got a job to do and I'm just going to be myself and it's not acting. You just do what you need to do. And I'm a hard worker and we'll get it done.
And that'll shun through. And I suppose now, because I mean, The Block's quite an established TV series today, all these years later. Did you guys have any idea what would be the byproduct of going on a show like that?
Absolutely. We had no idea what the outcome would be at the end of the TV show. Not at all. Like, it was a real whirlwind, especially because you're so engrossed in the world that you're in for the 3 months of the build while you're filming. To the show's credit and the crew, you've formed such good relationships, like with the producers and the camera guys and everybody who works on the show. Well, we did particularly, and we're still friends with a lot of those people as well. You're all just in this bubble, in this working bubble. They're working really hard, following you around with the camera. You're working your butt off. You're not sleeping. And it's 3 months of a literal grind. And then all of a sudden, it stops. And your show airs overnight and then people start recognizing you when you're walking down the street to get a coffee.
I had a really good physiotherapy job. I loved being a physiotherapist. We loved renovating more, but I was happy in my job and I told them that I'd be back in 12 weeks and that was 6 years ago. I did end up going back after the 3 month publicity period, but it wasn't where I wanted to be anymore. And it was hard to talk physio when everyone wants to talk block. And yeah, that was 6 years ago. So we had no idea that our lives would change so much.
I suppose moving past The Block into that transitional phase, what was that like for the first 12 months? And maybe tell us a bit more about, obviously today you guys are full-time renovators, but how did that transitional phase sort of play out and to get you to where you are today?
Well, for starters, like we were given a an Instagram page. Channel 9 created a Kyle and Cara Instagram account for us. And that obviously with the leverage of the block just started to grow and grow and grow. So our followers just sort of, you know, really spiked, especially while the show was airing. And we thought this is a great way for people to get to know sort of us behind the scenes. And obviously we talked about some of the things that didn't get aired because the show's obviously condensed and, you know, what happened that week and bathroom week and this, that, and the other. I suppose we've used that as a real launching pad into what we wanted to do. There was a big question, okay, what are we going to do with this platform and these eyes that people are watching what we're doing? And we decided that doing builds for people wasn't what we wanted to do because we had so many inquiries. People loved the quality of what we did and the fact that I was a builder and Cara's an amazing designer. So rather than build for people, we decided that what we wanted to do was inspire people to build their dream home.
It did take us a little bit to get to that point where we had lots of inquiries for consults all around Australia, and we did that for a bit. We'd fly to Tasmania for the day and walk around someone's house and give them ideas for a renovation. That whole experience, and we didn't have kids then, so we could fly here, there and everywhere. We realised, one, it wasn't sustainable. Two, you're only targeting that one particular person. There's only so many hours in a day. What we really enjoy doing is following the process the whole way through, which we couldn't do for everyone. And that's when it really was like, well, let's just do this for ourselves and see where it goes.
And since that period of time, your main focus has been essentially buying and flipping homes, hasn't it?
Yeah, or buying and holding on to them. Yeah, and a few kids along the way.
I suppose with the way the world and social media has elevated and so many people are spending way more time looking at their screen on their phone than what they do at television or even listening into a podcast, we thought we purchased a property in Toowoon Bay. We thought, let's make our own online series and take people through the whole journey. Because a lot of people came up to us after the block and said, we loved what you did, but we didn't get to see how you did it. And a lot of people get inspired from the show. They see these beautiful rooms come to life, but they don't really get the how and the why from it. So that's why we sort of thought, you know what, let's show people how to do it and let's show people why we're doing it and take them through that process. Because if you're giving them the knowledge about how and why, then they're more inclined to, you know, incorporate that into their own renovation or their own dream home.
So you mentioned that you're actually flipping some properties and keeping others. So can you talk us through a little bit about the strategy? And do you have a bit of a portfolio at the moment of a few properties that you are holding? And is that sort of for cash flow or for equity?
I guess it's for equity. And well, the one at Toowoon Bay that Kyle just talked about, that was our first online series. And we've still got that today and that we're just about to put them back on. We took it off Airbnb and holiday letting during COVID, but it's about to go back on. It's a big 5-bedroom family home near the beach, across from the cafes, in the best spot. We loved living there, but we built a 2-bedroom studio at the back as well that's got its own driveway access. And doing that from a cash flow point of view was one of the best things we could have done early on because it meant we could then use that cash flow to buy another property. And I guess there's never been, probably like, you know, a lot of your properties, there's never been a step-by-step, you know, thing we've written down. It's just organically happened for us and we've done one and looked at our next step.
It's kind of similar though in a sense because, you know, using cash flow has obviously helped you be able to move forward. So it's kind of the same sort of theory, which is what a lot of people and I think a lot of our listeners would do either with equity or with cash flow to be able to get into future properties, to be able to build their portfolio. So I think a lot of people would be quite interested to hear that you guys are sort of doing something similar as well.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing we've capitalized on with that particular Toowoon Bay home is that it lent itself to a driveway access down the side and a great backyard where Cara mentioned we're able to build a granny flat. I feel like today's the day you got to do that sort of stuff because you're opening up to resale to investors, not only investors, but like families who want to go in and buy with their parents as well. And it's really great for us to do, especially putting it on holiday let as well.
I'm keen to know, guys, Lloyd in his book, Positively Geared, you know, he talks a lot about what to look for, whether it's an investment property. Obviously, a dream home's a much more emotive purchase, as we've discussed. That might come down to the individual's wants. After all these years, sort of being able to knuckle down and go, okay, well, these are the non-negotiables that we basically need in a property, whether it's to buy and eventually sell or to hold.
I guess I'm always looking at it how I would want to live in this particular property. And for me, the non-negotiables are just creating that Australian lifestyle dream. So it's having a kitchen and a living area that opens out onto a backyard. And how are we going to do that? What's the best way to open up this house and create that indoor-outdoor flow and create the dream, I guess.
And Kyle, is it the same for you?
Yeah, I feel like depending on who you market it to, whether it's an older couple or like a young family. I love to be able to incorporate master bedrooms, a parents retreat with a beautiful bedroom, walk-in robe and ensuite. I feel like if you can create something which is amazing there, it's always a draw card for the purchaser because they feel like they've got their own place to retreat to and they feel like it's luxurious. They're in a hotel kind of space and it feels like they're on holiday.
I love that. It's like you're keeping the great Australian dream alive because, you know, we hear so much about people, you know, needing to live in smaller places and apartments and stuff because they can't afford certain properties. But if you go to the right area and you buy the right block of land and, you know, have a nice big house there, you still got that great Australian dream with a big backyard and really nice spacious family living. I think it's a great concept to promote.
Well, absolutely. All our personal projects have been on the Central Coast. So I guess from a Sydney perspective, they look at that and go, wow, you can get all that for the same amount that I can buy a smaller property or a townhouse in Sydney.
Well, that's right. Like we sold our first property that we bought in Killarney Vale once the renovation was all done to a family from Clovelly who moved up obviously to the Central Coast. And for what they purchased our first property for, which was, I think we sold it for $750, they couldn't buy much more than an apartment down in Sydney. So they stepped up and bought like a beautiful 5-bedroom home with a loft and a big backyard close to the beach.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a lot more now of people actually moving out of Sydney and out of other capitals for that sea change because it's much more affordable. And I think given what we've seen, I guess, in the economy and the markets over the last year or two, yeah, there's got to be much more of that. And some of those regional markets are really opening up, much more affordable. You know, take the families there. More people are sort of starting to work from home. So there's lots of opportunities, I think. So definitely a great Australian dream still alive. Just sort of get out of the big smoke.
It is.
Guys, I'm really keen to know, we've seen over the past 12 months or so a big trend towards, obviously a lot more people are working from home now, and that's very much becoming a social norm or a business norm, if you like, and particularly for a lot of big corporations, you know, we're going to see that continue possibly forever. Has that at all influenced or possibly for future builds the way you design homes? I mean, is a home office more important than ever? Is that something that possibly in the past may have been overlooked? Have you got any thoughts on that and in terms of moving forward?
Definitely. We saw it recently in the block when they did their recent room reveals because they did their upstairs and everyone had a bit of a home office. So obviously people ticked that box a lot better than others on the block. And the judges really like swung more towards the ones that had really a dedicated space for a great functional office because people are going to start working. Well, they already have started working from home a lot more and not traveling into the CBD and things like that. So that's definitely influenced the way we're going to develop properties in the future as well. I think you have to cater for that person who works from home and have a designated space.
And Cara, I suppose because you're the design chief, I've just given you that title.
Thank you.
Have you got any vision of what that could look like?
I try to keep my mind open because I feel like it's so dependent on the property. But just overall aesthetically, it just confirms that, you know, we're on the right track with making our home feel like a holiday. So we want to be able to feel like we're in a retreat. And even if they're not working in the actual home office, it might be where they store all their gear. But sitting at the kitchen table with the doors open, looking out to the backyard, it's creating that dream like they're working essentially in their holiday space.
We're going to talk in a moment about dream homes. That's something that, you know, Lloyd and I have discussed a lot over the course of our series, and Lloyd mentions it in his book, Positively Geared. But before we get onto that, Kyle, you mentioned something interesting before, and it was the sort of accommodating or building for blended families, you know, having a separate studio. Lloyd, it's such a great investment tool, isn't it? The ability to have dual income properties. I know you talk about that a lot, and it's a great way to leverage, isn't it?
Well, it is. Absolutely, Alex. I guess dual income properties are a great source of income, but they're very flexible because you can put blended families in there. You know, you can live in one side and you can rent the other, which is for additional cash flow, which really helps for paying off that mortgage. Or you can live in one side and put your in-laws in the other side, or, you know, all sorts of things. So there's plenty of opportunities. Dual income being duplexes, or it could be building that big home that we're talking about and then having a second, like a granny flat out the backyard or something, is another form of dual income, which is, you know, great for cash flow. And something that I certainly love doing and highly recommend.
So let's talk about the dream home. Would you say your current primary residence is the dream home at the moment?
Definitely is. We had visions of being in this property when we first bought our home back 10 plus years ago. And we've definitely reached that point sooner than we thought. And obviously the block and having this online presence has helped. We bought this property before we'd sold our first one. So we bought it over 5 years ago now in a beautiful location, exactly where we envision raising kids. But at the time we didn't have kids and we didn't know what we wanted to build. And we just sort of rented it out pretty much for 5 years before we revisited it and started the build.
obviously you guys inspire so many people in your work. Where did you both get inspiration for your current build from? Was it something that sort of came innately, or where do people who are doing such great things find their inspiration?
Well, I personally love going for a drive around some beautiful suburbs and seeing these amazing architecturally designed and built homes. And that's where I feel like I draw inspiration from. Like, quite often we've gone for a drive around Palm Beach and just scoped out these beautiful homes because they do things so well down there. And there's other suburbs that we'll go and have a look to. And I feel I'm drawn to things like that, like having a, you know, a tangible thing that I can see. And I'm like, okay, it gives me a design idea and I can see how they've built it and what they've done. And that's what I like to do.
And I just love taking like little tiny pieces from literally anywhere. It could be our travels, like, I don't know, taking a photo of some beautiful texture that I love, and could be ripping a page out of a magazine. It could be visiting a cafe and going, I like that little timber detail they've used on that table. And I almost like take little photos of everything essentially, and I put it on a physical mood board. I tell everyone to do that, whether you're renovating or building from scratch, go buy the big piece of corkboard from Bunnings and start a physical mood board, because I think people can get overwhelmed and lost because I like a lot of different styles, but it's what do I want to live with. So putting it all together physically and collecting tile samples and just slowly curating my own look means that it's unique to me or unique to that particular house.
And Cara, this is probably a question for you. I'm sure that you both would meet a lot of people, you know, they're wanting that design advice, but as you mentioned, they probably have five or six different themes they want to do. Is it hard to bring it all together to have obviously you want to have a common design theme across a build. You don't want to have kitchens and bathrooms with different finishes. Do you find that a lot with people that approach you, that they're just a bit scattered in terms of what they're trying to do? And have you also found it hard to go, okay, well, here's three different kitchen angles we could do.
Yeah.
You know, which one do we actually choose?
Yeah, because I think a lot of people try and blend all those things together. And that's another reason why I say have a physical mood board, let it sit there for a month or two or however long you need, and walk back in with fresh eyes and go, you know what, I really love that black monument cladding, but it's just not going to work with the white coastal theme I'm going for. And it's just sitting on it and then editing it, and you can't have it all.
Kyle, being a full-time chippy, how do you find the design process versus, I suppose, the actual process of constructing a home? How do those two normally work? Is it quite harmonious, or are you sometimes telling Kyle, well, hang on a minute, we can't do that?
All the time.
All the time. Yep. No, this is where Cara and I actually butt heads a fair bit, because Cara will have a design idea in her head and then I'll be trying to explain to her that we can't actually build that the way you're designing it. So there's always like the scales and they constantly tip, and we keep going around in circles until they get balanced, basically, until she's happy with the design and I'm happy with the design and how we're going to build it. So I feel like they do go hand in hand, but we just call that the design process. You've got to go around those circles and you've got to, like, you know, cross things out which are not achievable, and then eventually you get to the point where you're happy with it and you're both happy with it, and then it becomes harmonious.
Like the exposed beams in the house that we're currently in. I really wanted exposed beams, but I probably didn't communicate that clearly enough to Kyle early on, and suddenly we had these plans and I'm going, well, no, that's not what I wanted. And you're saying, well, can't just add that in now. So it's just that constant evolution.
That's right. The design process is definitely an evolution. But as well as that, you come up with a design before you start to build and you've got your plans locked away. I've noticed, like, we also have to maintain flexibility within those plans as well, to design things on the fly and change the aesthetic or the texture slightly to make sure that we're both getting what we want.
It's an advantage of being married to a builder. As you know, if you're building and you're paying a builder, all those variations add up.
Yep. It is. Yeah, I've got a long variation list from our last build. She's yet to pay that.
Yeah. And out of interest, who's normally compromising? Is it one or the other, or you're pretty amicable?
I feel like I'll compromise the
most. Probably. I would agree with that.
You've built the dream home now. What's next for you guys?
We're currently looking for our next property. Got a pretty clear idea of what we're after. And obviously having that dual income is amazing, but we're pretty open to other ideas as well. And I guess that's what we want to keep doing for the next 10 or so years. It's what we really enjoy doing, and we've made it work for us. And it means we can create online series to go along with that and inspire people along the way.
Still around the Central Coast?
For the moment, our kids are Zaya's 4 and Vader's 2. We're definitely open to doing work further away and even moving for short periods or seeing where that takes us. But while they're young, we're just enjoying being settled in.
Are they on the tools yet?
Oh, Zaya is.
Yeah, they love to pick up the hammer and, you know, knock around with me in the garage.
What they do with the hammer is what...
Well, that's it. We're running after them going, get that hammer out of your hand.
Or putting the screwdriver through the gyprock walls.
It's a nightmare. We make it work.
But no, I think that is our definite plan. Like we talked about that just this morning on the way down. We'd love to get another property and do a beautiful renovation. And we spoke about flipping that straight away. So buying and selling in the same market, do a beautiful renovation and sell it to a family who potentially want to move up from Sydney and have like a sea change, be by the coast in a beautiful home. And there's also the other side of it where we've talked about maybe hanging on to it and sitting on it for a few years.
And it's interesting because, I mean, Kari, you mentioned before, you guys have done a lot of this organically, but there are a lot of parallels. Lloyd's obviously a full-time buyer's agent and full-time investor. It's interesting to see that you guys have really adopted a lot of the principles in the book just by getting out there and doing it. Have you considered, I suppose, over the next 5 to 10 years too, you know, possibly taking some of the principles from Lloyd's book and, you know, a lot of the work he's doing to help further build a portfolio or to, I guess, you know, even extract more possible return out of what you're currently doing?
Yeah, definitely. We're just on this journey, and for us it has been organic to this point, but, you know, we're at a stage where we can start being a bit more strategic about what we're doing and where we're going.
So when you're flipping a property, I know I'm always concerned about, you know, the capital gains tax and stuff. So does that come into play and you're sort of looking carefully at the returns and the feasibility when you're looking at that sort of property?
Absolutely. We were even talking about the numbers on the way down in the car about the purchase price and the stamp duty and the funds to build it. And then you go to sell it and you're paying an agent, and then you're paying either GST if you go through the business or capital gains tax, and how you can get around it. Do you sit on it and live in it for 12 months and then sell it? And that's certain things you've got to weigh up, and you've got to do the numbers, and you've got to go about it like the right way and know exactly what you're in for, because no one wants to get to the end of a development and then get hit with a massive tax bill when it's something they might have been able to avoid.
That's something that I always talk about with my clients, because often people just think, oh, I want to build a duplex or I want to renovate a property and just flip it. But there's so much to think about. And it does come down to, you know, whether you're buying in a company name, you've got the GST, or whether you've got the capital gains tax. And of course, you've got the 50% reduction in that after the 12 months and everything. You know, you really need to take care of that before you get into the project and understand what you're going to do. Otherwise, like you said, Kyle, you're going to be hit with a massive tax bill at the end of it. So it's all a part of that strategy, I think, at the start.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, like, we're no expert property flippers, and I feel like we've still got a lot to learn, but I feel like the more you can educate yourself with what you're getting yourself into, the better off you're going to be. You're going to have a realistic goal and a realistic turnaround and a realistic profit in mind for what you might be achievable.
I think that's where it's important as well to surround yourself with a good team and be listening to the right people, be listening to the right podcasts even, but, you know, just having your accountant, it's really important that you're keeping those communication lines open, and so that if a property pops up, you can act on it quickly and know your numbers.
Once again, it's so funny you say that, because we talk a lot about the dream team. It's really important to have the right people around you, whether it's a solicitor, accountant, because obviously when you're trying to handle everything yourself, A, it's just information overload for starters, but B, you know, I'm hopeless with the percentage return on a tax spreadsheet, which you need a good accountant for. It's so important, isn't it, Lloyd?
Well, absolutely. And even now, like, and I think we talked about this in one of our other episodes, where I have the same team around me that I recommend to my clients. And, you know, I still ask my accountant for questions and things like that. Even if I know the answers and stuff, I've still got to sort of clarify things, make sure I know exactly what I'm doing before I get into my next deal. And like you said, Kari, if you find the right property, you need to be able to move on it. So you need to be able to just ask your accountant straight away, you know, can I do this? What are the ramifications? And the other thing, of course, is when you get a property and you're looking at flipping it, having a reasonable expectation for what the profit is. If you're doing a renovation and it's going to take you, you know, for example, 6 weeks, and you know you're going to flip the property after 3 months of ownership, then that's a different return to developing a property, like building something from scratch that you might sell 18 months later. Can't expect in 6 weeks to make a couple $100,000 profit. So you need to be realistic about those sort of things and make sure you run the numbers properly. But I definitely think that, like I said, Alex, having a really good team around you that can really advise you so that your head is clear, because you can't do everything yourself.
Guys, I'm sure there's virtually everybody listening to this podcast today is either currently on their own investing journey or they're wanting to get started. I know a lot of people too are very much looking at buying and flipping homes as an avenue to do that. whether it's, you know, as a primary residence and just moving on from property to property, you probably get flooded with people wanting advice on this, that, and the other. What do you think, in your experience, with the benefit of 12 years, a block experience since your first build, that is the 12 years, what do you guys think sells homes?
I think I mentioned earlier, I think having that beautiful indoor-outdoor flow between the kitchen, living, dining and the backyard. I mean, I'm a young mum now and I want to be able to put the kids outside, open the doors, entertain. So it's having that beautiful flow from the inside to the out.
Yeah, and I just think it's if you can connect your buyer to that house or that development emotionally. Like Cara said, whether it's, you know, that indoor-outdoor feel, that amazing bathroom, that cute picket fence at the front. You really want to paint a picture and allow that person to see themselves in it, no matter what it is. Like, you know, that cute front facade or that amazing parents retreat, if they feel connected to that and can see themselves living there, that's going to be your buyer.
I think too, in my experience, you know, the homes that often transact in relative terms really well within any market, they really do achieve that. So they're building so much more than just bricks and mortar. It's the emotional connection to the area. You know, if it's a coastal property, having that beachy style home, people really respond well to that. And particularly when people are buying their dream home or building it, you know, it is emotion, and emotion's typically what makes people put their hand up at auction.
Yeah, I like what you said about the front facade, just getting that initial first impact is really important. And I just do it without thinking now, I'll drive past a house and go, oh, if they put a fence up there, do a little arbor and a gate and paint that front door, that would look so cute. Maybe put some shutters over those front two windows. I just do it without thinking now, but getting that initial emotional connection is really important.
And looking back, let's go back to the first build at Killarney Vale. At that time, it's probably fair to say, you know, you didn't have an unlimited budget. So you probably now can sort of approach a project and say, okay, well, we're going to allocate this much to, you know, X, Y, Z. Any advice for people that are sort of in a similar stage of life to where you guys were at that time in terms of extracting the most out of a property with a limited budget?
I guess just creating opportunity for people to put their own stamp on the property, I guess. And looking back at that first property, it was a beautiful big block of land and we created a great family home. But would we have done things differently if we had that property now? Probably. We would have looked at doing a second dwelling to create that extra cash flow potentially. As Kyle said, we're looking for that emotional connection, or if you can't do it all, creating the opportunity where someone could come in and go, oh, well, I could easily just do that as well, add that extra second dwelling because they've made allowances for it.
I think if you're a young couple or a middle-aged couple and you want to get into that renovation, we obviously save money because we were able to live on site while we did the renovation. So if you're looking to do that and you can come up with an overall plan and live there, you're going to save money because you're not renting somewhere else. And obviously, you know, we did the renovation as funds came available. It did take a longer time, so we played like the long game with that one. We didn't have the capacity to go out and borrow $200,000 to complete the renovation, and obviously we saved money again by doing a lot of the work ourselves. So there's certain things there that you can do to sort of save money, take that bottom line off your build costs, and obviously not fork out money hand over fist renting.
Lloyd, I know earlier into your investment journey too, you would have had, you know, a similar experience. You've had a few, I suppose, family homes now. And did you find you had to approach it in a similar way when you were first trying to, I guess, get established but also add value to a property?
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. So when I first was trying to add value to a property, I had a very limited budget. So for me, that would be paintwork, maybe doing the floor coverings, the window coverings. But I remember with the first property I updated, I actually painted myself with a friend, and that saved me a fair bit of money, which is something I actually recommend to people these days, because, you know, you can pay someone $5,000 to paint your house, but, you know, if you just have to buy the paint, which might cost you, you know, $500, $800, whatever you spend, depending on how big your house is, and then do it yourself, then that's actually equity that you're creating rather than getting someone else to do it. So there's certain things you can't do. Obviously, if you're not a sparky, you can't do the electrical stuff and things like that, but there are certain things you can do when you're on a budget. And that's what I recommend with people, because if they're trying to renovate and then they think they're going to book a whole heap of tradies to come and do everything, it'll end up costing them, you know, a lot of money. So try and do a little bit themselves. And when you're on a budget, you do need to look for that those things.
And even just asking the trades when you're getting the quotes, is there something I can be doing to take some money off your quote? Like, what can I do to prepare you for your job? Can I strip out that wall so then you can just come in and literally do this and get out? So exactly. Asking the trade, keeping that line of communication open between the trades and asking, you know, what you can do to take some money off that bottom line quote.
Yeah, I would encourage people to ask their builder, ask their carpenter, can I do the demolition work under your guidance? Obviously, you've got to do it safely.
Hard hats.
Yeah, hard hats, boots, glasses, gloves. It might be carting rubbish out to the bin and making the site clean for them. And that is going to save them time doing it, because you don't want to pay a builder $60 an hour to walk tiles out to the bin. You could do that.
I suppose, Kyle, you've almost answered my next question, which is, from a builder's perspective, what are the things you can do to sort of help bring those costs back? And you've already answered that question. But would it be fair to say that anything sort of labor intensive is probably the best angle to approach sort of minimizing your investment? Obviously, you need a skilled carpenter or builder to obviously complete a project. But is it mainly, as you said, demolition, you know, removal of things? Is there any other ways that people could look to possibly save a bit of money when they're trying to stick to quite a strict budget?
Well, I think when you're going to do anything yourself, you've got to evaluate whether, you know, am I better off going to work and getting the professionals in? Or can they leave this and can I do it on the weekend? Can I get it done that way? And that's the best thing, I think, to do is just evaluate it and keep an open mind and talk to the trades and the builders about how flexible they can be and to obviously save you money and help the build come in on time, because that's another big one. A lot of builds do go over, but if there's anything you can do for your trades or your builder to keep the site clean, keep things flowing on time, keeping things in check, in particular things with a build that take the biggest lead times are joinery and windows. So if you can make sure you're answering all those questions and getting those things into production, so picking your window colours, signing off on those, picking your cabinetry colour and your bench tops, making sure those things are going to flow on time, that's where you're going to save money. Project's going to be finished sooner, so you can obviously put it on the market, or you're living in it, you're moving out of your rental and you've moved into the house.
It's really great advice. I'm interested to know, for the builds that don't go to the set timeline, because I'm sure a lot of them don't, as you mentioned, how would you deal with that, I suppose, from a professional perspective, but also if you are sort of working to a deadline and you're wanting to have your property on the market, let's say, for, you know, the peak selling season, and that's not going to quite happen, is it just a case of knuckling down and getting the work done, or are there sometimes things outside of your control?
I think it's like with anything, projects do often go over time, and that is a reality. And I think it's good for people to have a bit of a buffer zone and be prepared for that and plan for obviously the best case scenario with the expectation that it could go over. I think that's a realistic goal, especially for those really large projects. But if it means knuckling down and doing 5 10-hour days rather than 5 8-hour days and doing a weekend work, I mean, you do what you have to do to get the job done as well. And that's what we've always done to bring projects in on time. And once we've got a project up and running, we are really engrossed in it. That's wholly and solely what we're about, because obviously we want to get it done for reasons such as getting it on the market or moving into it ourselves, like, you know, the home we've just completed.
Just the last build, we had COVID thrown in the mix too. So it was like, let's get this build done before no one knew what was going to happen. We weren't sure if the whole building industry was going to have to shut down for a certain number of weeks. Let's just get this done. Let's get these bench tops in. Let's get this all finished before everyone goes into lockdown.
We're very lucky, actually.
Yeah.
Because it didn't happen. But
I know, so lucky.
Yeah.
I think even possibly, at least geographically speaking, where we're recording this from the Northern Beaches, there was an increase because all of a sudden home renovators too at the moment obviously had more time to think about their current place. Is this the place they want to live in? Some people obviously made the decision not to actually, you know, make a transition into another home, but they're going to renovate their existing dwelling. So in some respects, an exciting time for people to actually get in, get their hands dirty and add value to their existing property too.
Yeah, I agree. And never has it been a more opportune time for people to create a sanctuary in their own home. They're spending more time at home and they can't go on holidays. So let's put that holiday money back into the house and create the Australian dream, as we said earlier.
It's been so great having you both in the studio. Thanks so much for making the trip down to be with us today. I think we've really taken away some great points, and it's so refreshing to see that you guys are, you know, you're not just there trying to leverage all the hard work you did on the block just to, I suppose, build a business, but the fact that you guys are so honed in on inspiring other people to get in there, get on the tools themselves, or get the right people in, you know, credit to you both for that. I think it's amazing.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us. It's been fun.
Thanks, guys. It's been great.
Our pleasure. And where can our listeners find you guys?
So you can head to our website. It's kyleandkara.com. So we've got our three online series there and soon to be more. We've got a heap of how-to video content on there as well, and a big journal where we talk through room by room everything we've done over the last few years. Or you can find us on social media, literally Kyle and Kara.
Shouldn't be too hard to find. And that's Kyle, K-Y-A-L.
K-Y-A-L, yeah. That's it.
All right, just keep note of that, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks again.